Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at tailormade101.com. That's TailorMade101.com for details. So hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South America. Jima and I are excited to be with you once again. So let's take a look at what's on tap today. Deal or no deal? Have the NBA owners and players finally reached an agreement? Now, there's a strange video that is being played around the web. It says, no hiring until President Obama is gone. How many other major institutions have expressed this same sentiment? Is this the reason we are having our jobs problem? We'll take a look at that. Also, the unintended consequences of the Alabama immigration law. Seems to me that green trumps red, black, brown, and yellow. And of course, during the second half of the show, we have a very, very special guest, Chief Yeoman Keith Hurst. We salute you, sir. Thank you for your service, and we appreciate all that you and our men and women in uniform do for this great country. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. Of course, I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell. We want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at our current events. First up, the NBA lockout. Deal or no deal? After nearly 2 years of bickering, NBA players and owners are back on the same side. Now, Commissioner David Stern said that we want to play basketball. Now, in an article by the Washington Post, the sides reached a tentative agreement early Saturday to end the 149-day lockout and hope to begin the delayed season with a marquee triple header. December the 25th. That's right, Christmas Day. Most of a season that seemed in jeopardy of being lost entirely will be salvaged if both sides approve the handshake deal. Barring a change in scheduling, the 2011-2012 season will open with the Boston Celtics at New York Knicks, followed by Miami at Dallas in an NBA Finals rematch before MVP Derrick Rose, and Chicago visiting Kobe Bryant and the Lakers. Next up, no hiring until President Obama is gone. Now, there's a video that's out there that I want to play for you. Now, of course, it says, and you're not going to believe this, but it says that he is not going to do any hiring until President Obama is gone. I know you're not going to believe this, but I'm going to play it for you. Take a listen.
I'm John Shirik, and one of 11 Live's Facebook friends posted this picture from Waco, Georgia. The provocative sign on the truck reads, "New company policy. We are not hiring until President Obama is gone." So I drove there, out I-20, almost to Alabama, and met the man whose signs on his company's trucks have caused such a stir. His name is Bill Lumen. I couldn't call ahead. Lumen just disconnected his phones temporarily because the reaction has been so intense, pro and con. Lumen tells me he actually put up the signs and first posted pictures of them on his Facebook page 6 months ago. But for some reason, one of the photos went viral on the internet yesterday. He tells me he's not refusing to hire. He says he just can't afford to hire because of the economy, and he blames the Obama administration.
Can't afford it. I've got people that I want to hire now, and I don't foresee that I'll be able to afford it unless some things change in D.C. I spent 10 years in the Marine Corps protecting the rights of people who want, in your job, actually, the First Amendment and the Second Amendment and the Bill of Rights. And Lord knows they're calling me at 2 o'clock in the morning all night long and voicing their opinion, and I respect their right to do that. I'm getting a reaction. A lot of it's negative now, but a lot of people are waking up.
So Bill Lumen is keeping the signs up and the photos up, stirring up a lot of debate. John Shirik, 11 Live News.
What do you think about that? Me, my personal opinion is this is absolutely ludicrous. Now, obviously, he is not the only one doing this or behaving in this manner, because there's a lot of money on the books of these banks and of these corporate companies, but yet they're not hiring anybody. I wonder why that is. Obviously, the president released all type of legislation to help facilitate small business owners. So why is he speaking in this fashion, in this manner? What is causing him to take this approach as opposed to hiring? President Obama just released another addition or something that would give some incentive for people to hire with the veterans legislation. Again, what is going on here? When we open up the phone lines, we would love to hear from you. We would love to hear your comments. And remember, the number to dial is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Also trending this week is the Alabama immigration law. Now listen to this. The Alabama authorities said last week that they dismissed a charge against German Mercedes-Benz executive who was arrested under Alabama's new immigration law. Now, the Associated Press reported that the Tuscaloosa Police Department arrested a man last week for not having proper paperwork while driving a rental car in the city. However, City Attorney Tim Nunnally said in an email the charge was dismissed after the man later provided the documents in municipal court. Police identified the man as Detlev Hager, 46. The company said he was in Alabama on business at the time but declined further comment. The arrest drew widespread attention because the German automaker is one of the state's leading employers, and its decision to build its first U.S. assembly plant in Alabama in 1993 provided the spark to help lead the state's largest automotive industry, which includes foreign manufacturers Honda, and Toyota. Now, what's interesting about this case is not necessarily just the immigration law craziness, as you just heard or have heard in the past about the legislation, but is really the backstory. Now, I know you've been listening to all of the things that were happening with the immigration law. You've been hearing that. You've been hearing the smoke screen what it was happening with the Mercedes-Benz issue. But I really want you to take a listen at the backstory. Now, nobody better to do this than Melissa Harris Perry herself. Now, she was a guest host on MSNBC a couple of days ago, and she unveiled some staggering information. Now, I want you to take a listen to this.
Mercedes chose Tuscaloosa, Alabama, for a new car plant back in the mid-90s. But Alabama almost didn't make it because Mercedes was wary of the state's racial history. One big turnoff for the automaker? The Confederate flag. The flag flew atop the state capitol in Montgomery until 1993, despite much criticism in the late 80s and early 90s. And it was a point of such contention that in 1988, 14 African-American state legislators tried to break into the state capitol and physically remove the flag themselves. They got into trouble for that. But the flag was just too historically significant to remove from the capitol, according to Alabama's Republican governor at the time, Guy Hunt. Enter Mercedes. The Germans weren't too keen on building an American base of operations in a state that so revered the Confederate flag. The flag came down in 1993, the same year Mercedes chose Tuscaloosa. According to this 1993 Associated Press piece, Mercedes officials said they never would have picked the state as an industrial base had the flag still flown at the Capitol, the state's top industrial recruiter. The Tuscaloosa plant has been vital to Alabama's economy since it opened in 1997. And one estimate suggests that it has brought more than 41,000 jobs to the state. That's why it was a big, big deal last week when Mercedes-Benz executive, driving his rental car in Tuscaloosa, was arrested for not having his passport. He left it back in the hotel. Whoops. In Alabama, that's now illegal. It's a violation of HB 56, Alabama's new immigration law. Remember HB 56? The law has sparked protests since it went into effect a couple of months ago. It requires people to show proof of citizenship for every interaction with the state, things like getting heat and water. And many kids stopped showing up for school when the law first went into effect because of a provision mandating that schools must check their immigration status. And anyone helping an illegal immigrant, like a church, for example, would have been guilty of a crime. And the law is subject of at least three separate lawsuits. Now, a delegation of labor leaders and other civil rights activists visited Alabama recently to see for themselves how the law was affecting people's lives. One of those members was my friend, Elon James White, who discovered upon visiting Alabama that things were much worse than he'd imagined. White wrote recently that the law has created a culture of fear and suspicion where everyone is policing their neighbors. In one incident, a shopper went to make a cash purchase at a Walmart and was asked for identification. Now, unless it's alcohol or tobacco, you don't need ID to pay for something in cash. But in this climate, many believe it is allowable to ask for documentation anytime they deem reasonable.
As you can see, how ludicrous this is for somebody to be asking for ID for cash purchases. So I know that there was a lot of coverage of this particular immigration law. And I know that people were kind of remotely associated with it because it was on TV, it was in Alabama, with all of the other things that happened in Alabama, or par for the course. But when it happens to somebody of status with money, things begin to change a little bit. Interesting how the Confederate flag was initially too historical to remove, but now is gone. Remember, green always trumps yellow, red, black, or brown. Well, these are the stories that we will be discussing on the other side of the break. And don't forget, coming up in the second half of the show is Master Chief of Correction, Yeoman Keith Hurst. So stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and AskGema can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jema. And Ask Jema says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Boom.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. In just a few minutes, we're going to open up the phone lines. So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. But first, joining me live in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Jema Hill Cook. Jema, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
All right. Yeah, you deserve it. That and more. Now, let's get right to it. NBA lockout. What's going on there? How did they come up with a deal all of a sudden and they could do this over the last several months? What happened?
They, I think it's as much as you stated earlier, even when you were talking about the immigration, green trumps everything, and they began to see how much that money they were really going to lose overall. And, you know, fans can be fickle, and if the whole season hasn't been gone, it may have been a little bit harder to get us back. And I think they recognize that. I think they realize we better do something, and we better do something quick because, A, the fans not playing with us, and the owners realize the players wasn't playing with them either. I mean, the players, I think, should be applauded. They took their lumps in this too, but I think come Christmas Day, we're going to have basketball. And, you know, what a way. Go to church in the morning, come home, and watch basketball. You couldn't ask for nothing better for Christmas.
What was interesting to me is that something that David Stern said. He said that we resolve, despite some even bumps this evening, that greater good required us to knock ourselves out and come to this tentative understanding. Now, he also denied that the litigation was a factor in accelerating the deal. And so what do I mean by this litigation? Well, I don't know how many people knew this, but I'm going to go ahead and kind of chime in on it now. But NPR did a wonderful story on the specifics of this litigation. And so they reported that locked out NBA players, including Carmelo Anthony and Kevin Durant, filed a class action antitrust lawsuit against the league a couple of days ago in at least two states. Now, attorney David Boies, who represented the NFL during the sports work stoppage and now has been brought abroad aboard by the basketball player said the NBA lockout violates antitrust laws by refusing to allow players to work. Bowles added that Stern's ultimatum to now disband the union to accept the owner's last economic model or face harsher approval turned out to be a mistake. And so that, I believe, is where he went wrong, is by trying to play hardball with some informed players, as opposed to in the past, you know, owners used to come in and say, hey, we're going to do this. We're not going to let y'all work. We're not going to pay you. But it turns out they were wrong in this case.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, that's what they get, though. I mean, I think they overplayed their hand this time. But, you know, that's what they get. I'm just a fan. I love basketball. And, you know, I'm glad they was able to work it out. I would, you know, hated to have to watch overseas just to see some players' faces that I recognize. But I would have done it for the sake of basketball. I'm glad everybody will be back home for Christmas, so to speak. And, I think the owners kind of overplayed their hand this time.
You know, also, I wanted to kind of mention, you mentioned the overseas players. I was on a show a couple of days ago, and it was an interesting comment made that the reason why the owners were trying to kind of hold out is because they were looking at the performance of a lot of the international players. Dirk, for example, Yang, Yao Ming when he was playing. And there are other, Mutombo when he was playing. So there was a lot of different international players that were able to come into the NBA and add value. And then if you couple that with the fact that for the last couple of years when the American players played overseas in those leagues, they didn't do as well as they did, you know, 10, 15 years ago. So there was a lot of improvement overseas with their players. And the fact that they were able to, they could be a potential candidate to replace the American players. Do you think there's any truth to that?
No. I don't want to say no, but I don't think you'll ever not have a team nowadays that doesn't have at least one international player on there. The problem is that for every Dirk, there's, you know, five that's, you know, not worth their salt, their weight in salt. So, you know, the Dirks of the world, the Paul Gasols, the ones that come and make an impact, you know, they are the best that the other country has to offer. And so if they wanted to stay in their homeland and be great, they could, but they come over here because of the prestige of playing in the NBA. The NBA, the National Basketball Association, carries with it something that they could never get playing overseas. So I don't think we have to worry about them coming in, taking over, because for every Dirk, you know, there's a LeBron and there's a Kobe and there's a Kevin Durant, and, you know, you can name more of the, you know, American-grown ball players that have had an impact on the game of basketball than you can the Dirks of the world. So I don't think we have that to worry about. I think it's a great compliment, but I think it's something that people want to, you know, might want to keep in the back of their mind, but we'll have to be consumed by it for sure.
The good news, other than we'll be able to watch basketball, that I think it will give a much needed injection of workers into the workforce. I mean, I think more people now will begin to start working. I think that will help the unemployment rate a little bit more. It'll have some money that'll be able to circulate around Christmas time. So I think that at least the economy part of this is going to be good. What do you think?
I agree. I mean, there were so many businesses that were hampered by this lockout, you know, in terms of the vendors at the stadium. The parking attendant people. I mean, it was just so many businesses that thrive on basketball season that open, you know, pretty much, I mean, that's their high time. And so for the season not to happen, it had such a great impact on so many people, not just the 450 or so basketball players and the owners, but, you know, it really had an impact, you know, probably on millions of people that are somewhat either directly or indirectly connected to the NBA. So the question now becomes, will it be enough to do enough to get to an all-star break in Orlando, or do they just bypass the break and just keep going on through the season?
Interesting.
I think that's going to be the next hurdle.
Yeah, so you're saying that they're not able to gain enough momentum to have a short season and go into the actual all-star season?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, but then again, all-star break is what it is. I mean, it's more about the festivities and the events of surrounding all-star. So I'm sure the city of Orlando would like for it to continue because I'm sure they've already invested so much money into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the NBA probably might have to pay them back some of that money. And so I'm pretty sure they would want to do that. So it comes back down to everything coming down the green. So it comes back down to the dollar of it and whether or not somebody will make some money off of them having all-star or whatnot. So I'm pretty sure, though, they'll probably have it. I don't know if we'll have enough momentum. Depends on how those games are on Christmas Day. If those games live up to the rivalry that they've created over the last several years, then we're fine. If they come out flat and there's, you know, not a whole lot of intensity in the games and it's not fun to watch, then they don't need a break. They've had enough.
Well, what's interesting is that you mentioned coming out flat, right? We know that the NFL had some rough starts with a lot of different teams. And the fact that they were pretty much injury prone the first couple of weeks. A lot of people were injured early on because they didn't get the conditioning in, they didn't get the strength workouts, things of that nature. Do you see a similar pattern that may arrive for the NBA players?
I do see that. And I hope that they were paying attention to what happened to some of the NFL teams and some of the NFL players in terms of not being conditioned enough and going, you know, not having a long preseason at all and going right into regular season and really taking well into the second month for teams to kind of get their footing underneath them. And so I hope they don't have that kind of time, though. They play every other day. So maybe with them playing, you know, a little bit more, for 66 games, I think, you know, maybe they ought to be able to you know, sustain themselves and not have as many injuries. Hopefully they have some personal trainers and they've been working out. I hope we don't have anybody coming in not in shape because that's going to be unacceptable. I mean, it's just going to be completely unacceptable whether or not you're working out with your team. If you, you know, love the game of basketball, you should be game ready. So,
yeah,
you know,
but a lot of them are restricted from doing a lot of work. A lot of them are restricted from doing things together. I mean, you need to get timing down. There's a rhythm that's a part of the game. There's chemistry that happens to go around, things of that nature. So I think there will be some initial injuries, but you're going to have your marquee players that have been playing all the time and they love the game so much. But, you know, 80% of the rest of the people I don't think have that same type of work ethic. So we'll get a chance to get a feel real early on how well they're doing. As far as physical is concerned.
Yeah, well, I'm just hoping that they use some of them use this time wisely. I know someone went back to school and found some type of jobs and different things like that. But if they was really wanting it to have if they were really wanting a basketball season, I just hope they come in body ready. I mean, I know there's a mental aspect that you won't get till you're, you know, back with your team and who knows where the fallout is going to be in terms of where people might land. But, you know, hopefully their bodies will be ready, which hopefully will help speed up getting their minds ready to get back in the game.
I have to agree with you. I want to shift now to this video I was talking about in the opening. Now, if you want to see it in its entirety, by all means, go out to TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade, D as in Delta, E as in Echo, Talk Radio, all one word, TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com to see the entire video. But I played it earlier, and I'm going to play it again, and I want to get your reaction, Jima.
I'm John Shirik, and one of 11 Live's Facebook friends posted this picture from Waco, Georgia. The provocative sign on the truck reads, "New company policy. We are not hiring until President Obama is gone." So I drove there, out I-20, almost to Alabama, and met the man whose signs on his company's trucks have caused such a stir. His name is Bill Lumen. I couldn't call ahead. Lumen just disconnected his phones temporarily because the reaction has been so intense, pro and con. Lumen tells me he actually put up the signs and first posted pictures of them on his Facebook page 6 months ago. But for some reason, one of the photos went viral on the internet yesterday. He tells me he's not refusing to hire. He says he just can't afford to hire because of the economy, and he blames the Obama administration.
Can't afford it. I've got people that I want to hire now, and I don't foresee that I'll be able to afford it unless some things change in D.C. Yeah, I spent 10 years in the Marine Corps protecting the rights of people who want, in your job, actually, the First Amendment and the Second Amendment and the Bill of Rights. And Lord knows they're calling me at 2 o'clock in the morning all night long and voicing their opinion, and I respect their right to do that. I'm getting a reaction. A lot of it's negative now, but a lot of people are waking up.
So Bill Lumen is keeping the signs up and the photos up, stirring up a lot of debate. John Shirik, 11 Live News.
Okay, so Jima, did you hear that?
I did.
And I quote, "I'm not hiring until President Obama is gone." First question, what is wrong with Bill Lumen?
Well, you know, Bill Lumen is well within his rights as a business owner to decide when to hire and when not to hire. I would say he has some flaws in his thought process because he could help the economy by employing more people, then they would have more to put into the economy. And the more people we have working, we know, the more people we have paying taxes and consumer purchases go up and all that. So it's not real logical. I mean, he's basing it, I think, off of emotion, whatever his thoughts and feelings are towards the president. I think the president has been very kind towards the business community, especially small businesses. I don't think he's done anything to hurt small businesses. I think a lot of his tax breaks has been about helping small business owners and things of that nature. So it's not real sure what this business owner is talking about, but he's well within his rights to do so. And it's unfortunate, you know, that's how he feels, but he's doing nothing more than what Mitch McConnell said, you know.
Right,
so,
right.
As making him a one-term president, that's my job, is to make him a one-term president, forgetting that that's not the job he was elected to do. That's just the job he's chosen to do. So, you know, I hope the people in his district remind him of that and get him out of there. But, so I mean, you know, it's sad, but people do strange things these days.
You know, I just don't understand why he say that I am not hiring until President Obama is gone, because there's nothing that President Obama is doing right now that's preventing him or from hiring anybody. So there's an obvious disconnect there. I mean, the president has cut taxes for small business. He's provided more funding for small business to get loans. He's also provided tax breaks for small businesses. So nothing he says makes sense with respect to hiring or not hiring people while the president is in office. So, I mean, I don't understand what his argument is or what his argument could potentially be for not hiring anyone because a president is in or not in office. Can you help me? Can you help me with that?
I really can't. It just goes to show you how ill-informed we are as Americans in terms of our process of how government works. And that, you know, the notion that the president is responsible for, you know, the condition of the economy is crazy, because it's the amount of deregulation that happened under, you know, the previous Congress and the previous administration that allowed so many things to happen all at one time. And so, you know, for this guy to hold all of this against President Obama is just retarded. I don't even have to say it. Retarded, it's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense at all. And it's unfortunate that that's his thought process. But it's even more unfortunate that there's probably a lot more people like that whose thought process is just like that. So it's that they want to put everything off on President Obama and not put any responsibility on the Congress or even people in their own local areas. I mean, who should he really have a complaint with? He's gotten tax breaks. He's been able, hopefully, to expand if he wanted to. But what's his beef? I just say it's with the president. It has nothing to do with that's why he's not hiring anybody. He just don't like President Obama.
You know, I want to piggyback off of something you said, and then I want to shift to another question. But first, you mentioned a lot more people like that. And so I think that's important for the listeners out there to understand that there is a lot more people out there that think like that, that's really not it's really un-American to think that way, to think that the president is the cause of or is causing you not to hire somebody when you already know, if you really look at the details, he's provided a lot of things for you to hire people. And so I want to shift again back to the money again. If you follow the money, the fact that it's been very obvious to me that the people in Congress have been getting a lot of kickback, a lot of funding from a lot of lobbyists. I mean, the main one is the guy that made them sign that pledge. And so when you couple the fact that the president gets the majority of his funding stream from the people, i.e. through, small donations, even through the activism or the people that you see on the ground that's doing all the phone banking and things of that nature. So he's not held hostage by large corporations. And so since the president is, quote unquote, not a puppet in their eyes, he really has the liberty and the freedom to really be for the people. Now, so going back to the comment about a lot more people like that, well, the fact that because they are not in his pocket and because they're in Congress' pocket, they can really keep the whole entire economy, i.e. the job creators, held hostage as long as they want to. You believe that?
Yes, I do believe that. And that's the problem that we have, is that we have so many people who historically have been able to manipulate and control, and now that they can't, they're panicking. I mean, they're not making the same amount of money. They're still making money. At the end of the day, all your bankers, all these, all your politicians, they said the average politician, the average person in Congress, net worth is over $1 million. Over $1 million now. So how did that, when did public service lead you to be over $1 million is beyond me. So, of course, they're fighting getting rid of the Bush tax cut. That has a direct impact on them. They're not talking about business. They're talking about themselves.
Absolutely.
And so they put themselves above us, the people, who they were sent there to serve and to look after. They're looking after themselves.
So what I was going to blog about this week was the fact that, going back to our NBA conversation, the best offense is a good defense. And if we put the Congress on the defensive, I think we can begin to change the dynamics of our situation. And what I mean by that is, if we go out and look at, the next election cycle not being about the president, but about Congress. I mean, people do the work to make sure that the president gets you reelected or out of office, whatever their pleasure is. Of course, I'm for him, so I want him to be in because of all of the great things he's done up until this point. Then I should also be focusing my attention on my local politicians, the ones that continue to block the economy. And so my point is the fact that if we focus our motivation, our attention, our efforts on Congress and getting them guys out of there running campaigns against them, I guarantee to you we can change the dynamics of what's going on right now.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, the president has little power at the end of the day, really. And if we focus, as you say, our energies on those people in Congress who have not been operating in our best interest, and, if some of these less conservative shows on CNN or MSNBC or wherever began to scroll at the bottom of their shows, these Congress people that are not voting for the interests of the people but are voting for the interests of corporations, then we can see who it is. Because it's not like people are at home watching C-SPAN and watching the vote when they're voting on these different things. And there's so many things that they vote on that we don't have a clue. We hear about the big things like health care and the budget and all these sorts of things, but there are so many little things that they vote on as well that has an impact on our day-to-day life. And we don't know all of that. And so I think, you know, it would be good if there was a campaign to showcase who they are and what they voted on, what their voting record is as it relates to some of the things that they voted down and voted against and that have been against us, the people.
You know, I have a good example, and it's unfortunate this had to happen, but when the super committee was all in a room and they had all those people there ready to go, and then all of a sudden there was no vote that took place, no public vote that took place to show who was for, who was against the bill so people can really know. Because right now what's happening is they all coming out now saying, oh, it's his fault, and it's her fault, it's their fault. And there's no public record of what happened. So they try to keep these things stringing along so no one is really – there's no accountability to happen. And all the time, we have the entire United States held hostage because no one's making any decisions in Congress. President obviously laid out an agenda, obviously laid out a bill, obviously laid out all the things that were necessary, but these people keep pulling back from it and trying to mask the entire problem. And so it's unfortunate that, to your point, the super committee, the most recent example, did not have a up or down vote on the legislation.
Yeah, and that was, I'm sure, as you stated or alluded to, that was by design, because they already knew that they didn't want to be associated with it one way or another. But then the hiccup that was tried to be attached toward the president, where he should have been more active or he should have been talking to them more. This is what Congress said they wanted after they, voted down his jobs bill that he gave them. They said his budget deal. They said, we'll come up with this committee. Let us have this committee and let us come up with it. Well, if you know your people, and I'm sure the president has figured out his people, he knew they weren't going to come up with anything, but this is what they wanted. So I thought it was a brilliant strategy that we didn't quite understand in the beginning because we couldn't understand why he was letting them do it. But now we can say Congress once again failed of the American people, because they failed to do anything. They failed to address the one thing that they said they could fix, and they didn't do it.
You know, I also want to make sure that our listeners out there know that the language that you hear people use, that there was no leadership. You know, you'll keep hearing people say the president didn't lead on this particular action. But if you look at the history of what happened over the last several months, when the president, was asked to come up with a plan. Oh, he doesn't have a plan. He doesn't have a plan. He's that. He came up with a very detailed plan, which is really uncharacteristic of presidents. Congress really comes together and they come up with these plans together. But they wanted the president to do this, Democrats and Republicans. I'm not going to just say it's just been a Republican, because the Democrats have some culpability in this too. They should be slapped on the hand just as hard. But the fact of the matter is, the president was standing there asking these Republicans and Democrats, asking Congress to vote on this legislation. And so if he continues to get no, continues to tell him we're not doing A, B, and C, what sense does it make for him to stay there? if you got the entire Congress to do it, how is we going to say these 12 of the same makeup of people is going to get the job done? So what sense does it make for him to be there and, quote unquote, lead these people?
Right. And it didn't. That's why he wasn't there. He wasn't even in D.C., which I can't say I blame him. Because it was crazy. It was complete nonsense. He was there for the last go around, and they beat him down, and they beat him down. They talked about him, like he wasn't the president of the United States. And he sat there. He took it. He took the lies and the innuendos. He went and met with the leadership, and the leadership would say one thing in his face and come out and have a press conference and say the exact opposite of what they had just talked about. I mean, they did all sorts of things. So why would he put himself back through that again? Y'all said y'all wanted to leave. Y'all said y'all wanted to come up with a committee. Y'all come up with y'all committee. This is my parameters. This is what I expect to see. Bottom line. And that was leading. He gave them exactly what his order was, what he needed to see, what he wasn't going to accept. That was leading. Now, you guys go figure out how to make it happen, because I've given you what I know will work. You made a decision to vote against it, not because it won't work, but because I said it. Go ahead on. Come up with something else. And this is what I need to see. And they couldn't do it. So here we sit on the brink once again of, you know, here we are and going into December like we was this time last year.
That's right.
With people's unemployment benefits about to run out and all these other things and the Bush tax cuts. And
yep.
It's just, you know, at some point, you know, there has to be an adult in the room that says enough.
Absolutely. I want to turn now to another piece of trending news that I thought was, again, really interesting to see. And right after this segment, of course, we're going to have Chief Yeoman Keith Hurst to join us. And we're going to be really excited to have him come with us. But before we get there, I want to talk a little bit about this Alabama immigration law. Now, of course, it was everybody was for this law. Everybody was in the state of Alabama was saying, yeah, we want to do this and we want to do that. And I use everybody lightly. But all of a sudden, you had this chief executive of Mercedes-Benz, one of the major manufacturers there in the state of Alabama nowadays, was driving in a rental car, and he left his identification papers in his hotel room. And he got pulled over, and because he was able to produce the paperwork, the documentation at that time, they end up taking him down and booking him. Of course, they end up dropping the charges, but now it all of a sudden it changes the dynamics of the immigration law. So, Jimmy, what's going on down there?
Well, once again, this is what happens when you do not consider all facets of a decision when you're making it. It's also what happens when you make decisions in a vacuum and when you don't think things all the way through clearly. So, an unexpected victim, so to speak, of this new legislation happens to be someone that has brought the state of Alabama millions and upon millions of dollars, employs thousands of people. And yet, because you want to appear to be tough on immigration and keep out the undocumented workers and, you know, the illegal workers, so now they're reaping the benefits of it. I mean, the fallout from it, shall I say, in so many levels. The farming industry is down because they don't have enough people to go out and work the farmland. And that knows how to work the farmland. That's a forgotten craft, you know, for a lot of people whose ancestors may have worked the farmland. But, you know, we're a couple of generations removed from that. So there's a great learning curve from the average Joe trying to go out and pick something. And so, you know, that's a big deal. And then you arrest, you know, a CEO from a major company because he didn't have his papers. Really? His papers in 2011, we're looking for papers.
What was interesting to me is the fact that this brings to fruition what they initially feared when they brought Mercedes to Alabama. Recall that Melissa Harris-Perry did a wonderful story about the fact that they didn't want to bring Mercedes there because of that flag and all of the history that they had around racial just being racial prejudice. And so for the fact of the matter is, they said, you know, no, you don't have to worry about that. They end up taking the flag down, you know, after, you know, months and days and Sundays and years of African-Americans asking for it to be removed. But all of a sudden, Mercedes comes in and now says, hey, we're going to bring our business there, but we're not going to do it if you have that flag there because we know your situation, your history. And so they said, no, everything is okay. And then here we are. Several years later, the thing that they were most afraid of happened to the very company that said, nope, we shouldn't be there. How ironic is that?
I think it's very ironic, very, very, very ironic that is, you know, how it happened and to whom it happened, you know, that it happened to the very company that had that concern. And then Alabama, in its wisdom of trying to Lou in the business. Oh, you don't have to worry about that. We don't have that situation anymore. And that was back in 93, and here we are in 2011, and the very thing, like you stated, that they feared that would be a hindrance, because now you have people that may be coming over here from Germany to do business have to be worrying about another piece of documentation on them that they didn't have to, you know, quote unquote, worry about before. And so it's going to be a little bit, well, why? I don't need the drama. I don't need the headache, you know. So I'm pretty sure there'll be some amendments, because at the end of the day, it's all about the green, as we stated all show today. At the end of the day, it's all about the green. So I would suspect that we can see some amendments being made to this law. Somebody is probably already writing it up as we speak to present. Guarantee it.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be some major changes in this legislation,
right.
Major changes.
Yeah, because they definitely don't want that to happen again.
And you know, and then not to mention, you mentioned the fact that, you know, they're going to be coming over here and have to worry about this extra paperwork to be carrying around. Nobody wants to deal in a country, especially if you got status, where you got to worry about pulling out papers every time you get, you know, get stopped by the police and things of this nature. And then Melissa Harris Perry reported in her story that people had to present papers when making cash purchases.
Mm-hmm.
And this is crazy. And so that's not an environment that's conducive to any type of forward progress, especially talking about the land of the free. I don't understand how they can continue to go backwards and they can't continue to have that type of attitude towards people in general, let alone them being immigrants or not. And then, of course, the Republican debate kind of highlighted that even in more detail about how people feel about immigration. But I think it's crazy. So what do you think, what's the next move for Alabama now?
Well, I mean, and then the fact also with that is that you have the fact that you can ask me for my papers just based on what I look like. I haven't done anything to give you any suggestion that I'm not an American citizen. So based purely on what I look like, my features, you can say I need to see your papers. And I find that to just be appalling, number one. So that in itself is I think, they're going to have to redo that. They will make some adjustments. They have to, because in order for them to continue to make money, which is what it all comes down to at the end of the day, it's all about making money, for them to continue to make money, they're going to have to make some changes to this and make some adjustments to it.
I have to agree. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Press 1 to talk and 2 to listen. So last question, Jim, about this before we move into our next segment here. Of course, we're going to bring in one of our great veterans, Chief Yeoman Keith Hurst, here in just a few minutes. But before we do that, last question about this particular issue. How do you think Melissa Harris Perry did on covering in for what was that show?
Rachel Maddow.
Yeah, how do you think she did for Rachel Maddow show this week?
Oh, she always does an excellent job, because Melissa is very informed and she takes the time to really give you some stories that you hadn't heard before. I had not heard that before. And Rachel does that too. Rachel lots of times will have something of information that you hadn't seen anywhere else and won't see anywhere else. And I have to say, I haven't seen the coverage of this story on any other news station, but when Melissa did it the other night on the show. So she always steps in and does an excellent job. And I just have to say, as a plug to MSNBC, they have done a lot to try to bring on more diversity in terms of people of color and specifically African Americans. Into some of their anchorships, so to speak. They have the other day they had Eugene Robinson, who's a columnist with the Washington Post. He sat in the other day on the Martin Bashir show. They've had Dr. Michael Eric Dyson. He sat in a couple of times on Ed Schultz's show, and so they've Craig Melvin is now added to the to the News Nation lineup.
And you can't
Cameron
forget
Hall.
About your buddy Al Sharpton there. He got his own
show.
Well,
you know, Al Sharpton, that goes without saying. You know,
that's
he's
your buddy
he's
there.
He's a constant. So they've just done a lot to bring in some different types. And they're not all alike. Although, you know, Dr. Michael Rick Dyson and Melissa Perry are both professors, but their language is totally different. So it's not like you're getting the same type of thought process because they're both professors. So I really like, and not only are they diverse in ethnic and gender, but they're just diverse in thought process. Every Democrat or every liberal, we don't all think alike. You know, there's various degrees to us, and so I have to applaud them for giving us some of that.
Outstanding. I have to agree with you. And that's why I wanted to really expose our listening audience. You know, we're covered by all seven continents. And I like to make sure that we emphasize some of the great stories and reporting that she is doing. And because you're right, I mean, that story was kept kind of a hush-hush for a long time. And so to be able to make the connection between what happened most recently with the immigration law and how it took full circle for when they initially asked to then remove the Confederate flag because they know the racial history that they have, and then for here it is 9 years later, it come back to bite them, I think was a powerful piece. And that's why we had to also to make sure that we kind of emphasized it here on our show. On the other side of the break, we're going to be talking to Chief Yo Man Chris, Keith Hurst. He is my man. He's going to be coming up and talking to us next. So to be sure to check out our blog. We have a showcase out there on Chief Yeoman Keith Hurst. And the fact that if you look on the left side of the blog over there, you'll get a chance to see a full detailed reporting of him. He's just a wonderful guy. I've been knowing him for several years. And he also is going to be our TaylorMade Spotlight of the Year. He made some donations to our Feed the Hunger campaign last year for our inaugural program. So he's a wonderful gentleman. We're going to be talking to him, so you don't want to miss this conversation. So if you want to go out there and check out our blog and in the spotlight on him, go to TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. This is where you will find a unique perspective and stimulating commentary on the current events. I invite you to check it out and stay tuned. Keith Hurt is up next. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Boone friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're full service,
Interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing,
web design,
technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. In just a few minutes, we're going to be bringing in Chief Yeoman Keith Hurst. So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Now, I want to read for you real quick about this law that President Obama signed into law. Now, President Obama signed into law Monday legislation aimed at helping unemployed veterans find work while putting more cash in the hands of companies with government contracts. The legislation, which creates tax breaks for companies that hire jobless veterans, marks the first proposal from Obama's $447 billion jobs bill to be signed into law. Now, moreover, the veterans legislation had overwhelming support from both parties, with the House passing the measure 422-0 and the Senate approving it 95-0. And in addition to the tax breaks for businesses, it also beefs up job training and counseling programs for unemployed veterans. Now, today we have joining us Chief Yeoman Keith Hurst, and he's been in the military for over 23 years. And we want him to talk a little bit about his career. And so he's going to be getting out, and he's going to be one of the first ones to be able to take advantage of this new legislation. So Chief Hurst was born and raised in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. He graduated from Southeast High School and completed an associate degree in general studies from Columbia College and a bachelor's degree in criminal justice from the University of Oklahoma. That's right, Boomer Sooner. I know Jima loved that. He began his 23-year naval career at Recruit Training Command in Great Lakes, Illinois in 1988. Chief Hurst is married to his wife, his lovely wife, Paula, of 23 years, and they have one son attending college as a sophomore and another one as a senior in high school. Now, Chief Hurst's personal awards include the Joint Service Commendation Medal, 2 awards, the Joint Service Achievement Medal, 3 awards, Navy and Marine Corps Achievement Medal, 5 awards, Good Conduct Medal, 5 awards, and various other service awards. Chief Yeoman Keith Hurst, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for that introduction.
Well, you know, it's an honor and a pleasure to have you join me. You know, I've been knowing you for several years, and you have always been such a good man, such a good soldier, and such a good man of God, I should say, that it's always a pleasure to have you join us. And know now that you're going to be approaching retirement and hopefully being able to receive some of the great benefits of this new legislation, I am glad to have you here with us.
Thank you, thank you.
So it all
goes back to how we're raised on how you live your life.
I absolutely agree with that. So the first question I want to ask you, how does it feel to be approaching the end of a long military career?
Well, first of all, it's exciting, but on the other hand, it's very kind of nervous about it, you know, with the economy the way it is and all that types of things. But it's definitely exciting. You know, this is a one-time thing that a lot of people don't get to do is retire. So it's very exciting, but at the same time, I'm kind of nervous about it.
Understand. So what inspired you to choose the Navy over the Army or the Air Force or Marines?
Well, actually, I chose the Air Force first.
Okay.
But, you know, you take the test, and at that particular time in my life, you know, I just needed a change, and I needed to do it then. The Air Force wanted me to wait about 8 months before I could even go to basic training.
Okay.
Well, the Navy was right next door, and they was willing to take me in the next week.
Okay.
That's kind of how I led on to the Navy, so I just figured that's where I was meant to be.
Absolutely. So talk a little bit about the ups and downs of your 23 years in the Navy.
You know what? I can't even say that there were any downs.
Awesome.
The Navy has allowed me to grow as a man, take care of my family, and to travel around the world to places I would never have gone before. You know, I come home to my friends, and they haven't left the state of Oklahoma in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't feel that the Navy has any downs. You know, you go into it, if you go into it with a positive attitude, you're gonna get positive things out of it.
Absolutely.
Also, the Navy has allowed me to finish my degree.
Mm.
I graduated with a bachelor's degree and don't owe anybody any money.
Woo, and that's a blessing right there, boy.
I'm telling you. I don't owe anybody anything, so I don't see any downs in the military.
Wow. So talk about some of the places you've been since you've been in there.
Well, I joined the Navy in 1988, and from there, before that, again, I hadn't never left the state of Oklahoma, so the Navy shipped me off to Chicago, Illinois, where I went to boot camp. And then from there, I've been traveling ever since. I went to a ship. I've been to Israel, Turkey, Spain. I can't even think of them so quickly. A lot of places.
Mm-hmm.
Been on the West Coast, the East Coast,
mm-hmm.
Colorado, California.
Wow.
Just so many places.
So now, after 23 years, after traveling around the world, Israel, Turkey, Spain, East Coast, West Coast, you are finally approaching the end of your career and your military career. So I want to know, and I guess all of the listening audience out there want to know too, is how does the military prepare their soldiers to transition from military life to civilian life?
Well, that's interesting because they do actually have a program that kind of help us prepare to translate into from military to civilian life, and it's called the TAP program, which stands for Transition Assistance Program. And in this program, they have counselors that come in to help you with career, resume writing, internet job search, workshops, your military benefits for education, employment, health care, personal finance, and even relocating back to wherever you want to go.
Wow, that's awesome.
This program lasts about a week, and I'm actually going to be attending one next week, starting Tuesday. And they pretty much help you with everything that you could think of for transitioning back to civilian life.
Wow. Is that similar to what you think will happen when all of the soldiers that are coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan, and as they get ready to make their transition, that they have similar opportunities for them as well?
Well, I know in the Navy it's actually mandatory that we go through these programs.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, it's a mandatory program that you have to go through before you separate from the service. And it's just for your benefit, so you have all the information that you need to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know about any other branch, but I know for the Navy it's mandatory that we take this.
Awesome. So now, unlike many military veterans, you have prepared yourself well, obviously talking about the degrees you've obtained from the University of Oklahoma and your associate degree. What would be the best case scenario for you once you leave the service?
Well, you know what? That's one of the things I'm really kind of nervous about because, you know, now I have to go out and kind of market myself. Where I've never had to do that before. So with the education, I just felt that it was important to try to get some educational background because it can't do nothing but to help you go forward. The Navy, you know, they can't prepare me. Well, I guess they can prepare me as best they can, but I have to go out there and market it myself now. So
absolutely.
I
can tell you that one of the things that you know, I spent some time in the United States Army, and we had a similar program that you had, but it was not mandatory. And, of course, I got out as a sergeant first class. And I can tell you that I did go to school when I was in the military. I did have an associate degree, but it didn't take me the length that a bachelor's degree would take you. So you're going to be already far ahead of any of your peers, because not only will you be entering the workforce with 23 years of solid leadership experience, because there's no other leadership experience you're going to have getting out of, unlike the military, by far. And you're going to also have a college degree from a respectable university in your hand as well. So you're going to be in a very good, unique position when you retire. And then if you couple that with this new legislation that the president has signed now into law, it's going to be really to your advantage. So how do you feel so far about your chances, although the economy is kind of not going in a good way now?
Well, I could tell you this. I just read the other night that Oklahoma City is one of the number one place for a military to retire at. And
awesome.
I went to a job fair a couple weeks ago, and I have to say it did make me look up to the potential jobs that's out there. And having that degree, I can tell you that it opened up way more doors than I would have had without the degree.
Yes, indeed. Yes,
so,
indeed.
You know, I'm optimistic about, you know, my chances of finding a job. I believe I'm going to find some job. But, again, the economy is not that great. But, you know, I feel that the education is definitely going to help me pursue the jobs that I want. I mean, I have some choices and not just have to take any type of job.
That's awesome. So what are some of the things that you're looking at doing? What would be the best case scenario for you? What would be the ideal job other than walking into a CEO position?
Well, I really kind of want to work with juveniles, and that's why I kind of pursued the degree of criminal justice.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like, you know, so many young guys out here that just need somebody to kind of talk to them. And, you know, if it's just one person that I can help, I'm satisfied with that. So my ideal job is getting into some company or something that works with the youth, and that's what I'm really looking at right now.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So now that you've, as you look back over your 23 years, what would be some of the things you would like to do differently?
Well, looking back, you know, the Navy has changed as well. So when I first came in, the education wasn't available as it is now. So if anything, I would have took advantage of the education earlier in my years. Where I tell all my sailors now, hey, we got all these benefits here. We need to take advantage of it. Even if you just take one class a semester, you take it, because I didn't have a chance to do that. So kind of towards the end of my career, I start taking a lot of classes to try to finish before I get out. But I just think the educational benefits are just great right now. And people that's in the military have to take advantage of them. The education. So that's what I would do. I would change that. I would take more education early in my years than I did.
Wow, that's outstanding. So what other advice would you offer to young shipmen entering the service now? And how should they prepare for their next career as you are doing now?
Again, I know I'm talking about education a lot, but that's how important I feel about it. To prepare for your next career, you gotta get the education. You gotta get that paper. And I would just tell them to be positive in what they want to do. The military is a great life to me. I love it. So I would just tell them to get in, go forward, and be positive in everything they do, and they'll do well.
Awesome, Well, any final thoughts? We're gonna take a quick break here. Any final thoughts?
No, I just, you know, I love what I do, and if anybody ever have any questions about the Navy, hey, I have no problem talking to you and leading you in the right direction. So
awesome. We're gonna ask that you stay on after the break for a few more minutes, just in case anybody wanna call in and ask you any questions. And the number to call is 323-580-5712. I'm going to close your mic until we get some callers in and ask questions. If you want to chime in, just hit the chat room or ask the question on Twitter or Facebook. But nevertheless, we're going to have Keith Hurst stay on the line with us for a few more minutes. I know he has he's a busy man, has a lot going on, so we don't want to keep him too long. So again, the number to call is 323 580 5712. Again, on coming up next, we're going to be talking about Tyler Perry's new movie as well. And when we return, we want to hear from you. Remember, everything you want to know about what we comment on here, you can find on our blog. And that's at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TAILORMADE, D as in Delta, E as in Echo, Talk Radio, all one word, .blogspot.com. This is where you will find a unique perspective and stimulating commentary on the current events. I invite you to check that out. Stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and AskGema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, AskGema. And AskGema says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Again, to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. We've got a caller's lines here. We're going to go ahead and go to our call. Last 41243. You're listening to Current Events. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, it's Dr. Monica Lewis, Nehemiah Christian Academy, Cedar Hill, Texas. How are you there, Mr. Cook?
Absolutely wonderful, Dr. Lewis. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I just had, a trifold question for Keith Hurst. He's a good friend of our family and like a brother to me, and I'm excited about his retirement and our endeavors to finally be able to travel and be empty nesters. But I want to know the impact, not only that it's having on him becoming a veteran, but as far as his family and his wife, and as far as, you know, revenue aspects, the transition, how does that feel me and the wife as well?
Well, I have
Keith,
to say,
your mic is open. Go ahead.
It's definitely an impact on our family right now, because not only am I going through some type of transition, my wife is also going through a transition. She's just finishing up her master's in family therapy or something. I'm sorry. But so she's actually transitioning into a new job field herself. And financially, yeah, we had to, you know, shift some things around. But, you know, you do what you have to do. I don't have a problem with it because I know at the end, you know, it's all going to work out for all of us. But, yeah, it's definitely an impact on the family as well.
Okay, and my other question was, of course, Patrick, you know, my husband James is ex-Army with you as well, and he also indicated that it wasn't mandatory for them to complete TAPS program. But I want to know, Keith, since you've been in for such a long period of time, what's the difference in the TAP program that you see versus like at the beginning of your career versus now? How has it transitioned over the years?
Well, I could tell you, I didn't know much about it when I first came in because I wasn't looking at separating or getting out of the military, so I didn't know much about TAP at all. But in the Navy, it is mandatory, even if you have to get out at a, you know, a quick separation. They have what they call a carrot brief, which is TAP, just taken down to like a 4 to 6 hour time frame where they just go over all the benefits and stuff real quick. Where if you take the TAP class itself, it's a week long where they go more into detail about the benefits and how to apply and all that type of thing. So it's definitely mandatory in the Navy. For the Army, I'm not sure. Sounds like it's not. But I think, you know, for the Army people, that's a loss for them because I think it should be military, should be mandatory because it's definitely good information for all veterans to know. But I've heard of veterans that got out of the military and didn't even apply for their VA benefits. Now, that they would have been went through TAP, they would have knew how to do that as well, where to go do it and everything. So I think it's definitely important for all military to go through a TAP type of class.
All right, well... okay, so Dr. Lewis, thank you for those questions. Those were wonderful. Jima, are you still with us?
I am.
I'm gonna give you a couple of seconds to ask our guest a couple of questions.
Probably my main question would be, as I look back over your career and some of the places you stated you've gone, and this is a comical question. how is it that a person in the Navy? I think of Navy and I think of water. And I noticed a couple of the places that you landed was not near a large body of water. So how did that happen that, let's say, you landed in Colorado? How is it a person in the Navy? Because, see, that might be a hindrance. Somebody might think they'll only be at places where there's large bodies of water. And your career in itself shows that that may not be the case. So, you know, what is it, you know, how is it that you ended up in a place like Colorado?
Well, that's the great thing about the Navy. We're not just going to be about the water. We have airplanes, we have ships, we have guns, we have it all. Being that I was an administrator in the Navy, I could go anywhere because administration is, you need that everywhere you go. So being that I was an administrator, I was able to go to Colorado. I'm in Oklahoma right now, which people... You know, you wouldn't think the Navy is in Oklahoma, but it is. So that's the reason why I was able to go to a lot of places.
So basically, your advice might maybe to that new recruit is, you know, don't limit yourself. If you want to see more, then, you know, aspire to be more and to get into those positions. Excuse me, that would allow you to kind of go places that you wouldn't normally think you would be able to go being in the Navy.
Exactly. I wouldn't definitely want anybody to limit themselves, but it all depends on the interest in that particular person and the job that person wants. I would definitely advise him to take the job that he wants, because if he go into a job that he don't really like because it's going to take him more places, he's not going to be happy. So I would advise him to take the job that he's really interested in, and that way he will enjoy his work as well.
Good.
Okay, so, thank you, Jima, for that. And then you can also send Jima some questions also via Twitter. And as you heard Rev. Al say, you can follow her at Ask Jima. That's A-S-K-J-E-M-A on Twitter. Also want to know, Keith, about the length of time TAPS is. How long is it? I mean, you mentioned that you could take an abbreviated version. I think you call it CARAT.
Right.
So how long is the extended version of TAPS? How many days or weeks you have to do it?
The extended version is actually 4 days. The one I'm going to next week is Tuesday through Friday.
Okay. And so what are some of the things that they do specifically? Each day has a theme or a focus?
Yeah, it does. I don't actually have the itinerary for next week, but I know, you know, they're going to do a section on career counseling and resume writing where we actually go through. I think you have to write an actual resume while you're there. They teach you how to go through the internet now. It's probably 80% of the jobs you apply for online now. So they teach you how to log on to the job, Monster Jobs or whatever, those type of internet sites to apply for jobs and teach you how to do that. They go through an interview section where you have to actually dress up, wear a shirt and tie, and you go through mock interviews and kind of give you familiar on how what it's going to be like to actually go through an interview. Because, as I said, I hadn't been through an interview in 23 years.
Yeah,
so
I can imagine.
Those type of skills is something they're really, really going to need to kind of brush up on. Then again, they go through all your military benefits, going through the VA, your health care benefits. They offer you personal financial counseling to prepare to get out. Now, in the Navy, they don't require you have to take it once, but I've told to take it twice. You want to take it about 18 months before you get out and about 6 months before you get out because things change.
Oh, okay. So you go through the program early on to kind of get a feel for it.
Yes.
And then
just
you go through it again.
Yes.
Okay.
About 6 months out because things change every day. You know, like you say, President Obama just signed this one bill, so that's going to help the veterans.
Yes,
so that's
yes.
Things that I'm hoping, you know, I'm going to hear more about next week. So you if you can, you know, everybody can't do it, but if you can, you want to take it twice. So I took it about a year ago, just kind of getting a feel of what it's about. They even have opportunities to be teachers, from troops to teachers is another field that I was looking at, where they take veterans and they give you all the training to be teachers. They pay for your certificates and all that type of thing. And again, the education, you got to have a bachelor's degree to do that.
Right.
So that's another door that's kind of opened up for me now. So I'm looking at that also.
Awesome. So obviously you made a lot of good choices over the last 23 years and with respect to your military career, and I have no doubt in my mind you're going to continue to make those and better ones as you move forward. So I do have another question though, and this is related to your military your end of military ceremony. Is there a specific ceremony that's associated with the retirement? Or is that something that you do personally, or does the military provide you with something like that?
Oh, no. The military provides everything you need for that. It's a retirement ceremony. And, you know, each branch has its own traditions. And the Navy, we have our own tradition. Like, one tradition in the Navy is like when back in the old days when the captain or something went on to the ship, they ring four bells, and that announces his arrival on the ship. So in our military retirement, they ring four bells for us leaving the ship, meaning leaving the military for the last time. And the Navy provides everything we need for that. You should be getting an invitation in the next few months from me.
Okay. So when is the date? Is it like over the summer or how soon or how close are we?
I'm looking at about May time frame right now.
Awesome, awesome. So that's the ceremony. How long after the ceremony will you be able to say it's over?
July the 31st is my official retirement date.
Wow. I can tell
but, you know,
you,
I have,
go ahead.
But, you know, I'll have my ceremony in May because of, you know, I have all my leave or vacation if people
right.
So I'll be out of the military in May, but I still get paid until July the 31st for a full-time.
Awesome. You know, so I'm gonna tell you, when I spent 12 years, 11 months, 15 days in the United States Army.
Wow.
And, you know, I had a couple of opportunities when I got out. Again, you mentioned education. I was able to attain a bachelor's degree myself in an economy, in a similar type of economy. And I can tell you, having that military experience gave me an edge, you know, amongst the people that I was entering the workforce with. So I want to continue to encourage you that you will have that same edge when it comes to getting employment because of your work ethics, because of your leadership skills, and because of that degree, it will give you an edge. But I can also tell you that one of the most difficult things for me when I got out of the military after being in for so long was the first day that I woke up that I didn't have to be anywhere. It was a strange feeling for me. And so what I mean by that is every day for over a decade, I got up in the morning, I had to make formation 3 or 4 times a day, and I had extended work hours from 5 a.m. basically until about 7, 8 o'clock every night of my life for 12 years. And so the day that I got out of the military and I woke up that next day and I didn't have to be in it, that was a strange feeling for me. And
Patrick, I could tell you I'm feeling those feelings already, because I was just thinking, this time next year, I don't know what I'm going to be doing.
Right, exactly.
And it's just strange, you know. I don't know what my plans are. I don't know where I'm going to be working at all. I don't know anything right now. But, you know, I'm looking forward to it, though. But it
is strange. Yep. And so the second thing that I had, and I want to also encourage you along these lines, too, is that you will find that your work ethics will be a lot different from civilians. And I'm going to use the term military and civilians for now, because it's going to take several years for you to make that transition from a civilian, from a military mindset to a traditional mindset. And here's why I say that. The military mindset is very structured. What I mean by very structured, there are processes in place for everything you do. There is consequences for everything that you do. There is a leadership structure in everything that you do. In a civilian case, not so much. And so one of the first things, the second thing I had to adjust to was the fact that there's no real hierarchy in civilian in world. People can walk in one day and not care about what you say one way or the other. And so there's an adjustment, especially towards your leadership style, because in the military, your leadership is pretty much straightforward. You tell a person to do something, they do it. If they don't do it, there's consequences. But in the civilian, you have to influence them to take that position to do something. Because if they don't do it, they don't care. Because they're going to walk out and go get another job. There's no consequences. So, you know, when I say consequences, I mean that lightly. But, you know, because there are some consequences. But for the most part, people in the civilian community have to be really encouraged and influenced to get the job done. And so that was the second transition that I had to make. So I was very rigid when I came out of especially being in the Army, where everything was so hardcore, straightforward, and so structured.
Right.
And I'm sure the Navy is the same way. It's very structured. And so when you get out, it's going to be a very different dynamic that you've experienced for the last 20 years as a civilian than it was in the military.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm sure that is true. But, you know, I've been doing some research, and there is a lot of companies that hire a lot of military people, especially around Oklahoma, around the base and whatnot.
Yes, that's true.
Hopefully I can get into something that, you know, that have ex-military people, so be kind of used to the job structure and whatnot.
Right, absolutely. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, number is 323-580-5712. Looks like we got another call on the line. Caller from 3765. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
Hello, this is Reverend Mary Hardy Hancock, calling from Kansas City, Kansas.
Hey,
and I
there.
Do have a question to ask Chief Human Keith Hurst. In regards to the guys who are out, What about them? How do they prepare? What if they didn't prepare, you know, if they've been retired for 5 or 10 years? Are there educational benefits available for them? What advice can you give them?
Well, that is true. That's where they need to go and speak with their VA representative because, yes, they do have some benefits. If they served and got out honorably, they have benefits that are due to them. Again, that's where I thought the TAP program is really important to go through. But if they didn't, they still can go through the VA representative and get some of their benefits.
Excellent. Because I'm sure someone may be listening, you know, this evening, and they think they've been out too long, maybe like I said earlier, 5, 10 years, maybe even 15 years, and they think it may be too late, you know, for them to tap into some of the benefits. Okay.
It's never too late, ma'am. They served their country, and it's never too late. They do have some benefits that's due to them.
Very good. Bye.
And I want to echo what Herb said is the fact that call your local VA people because, you know, there are benefits, there are opportunities out there that are afforded to you, but you won't ever know until you call. I remember going to lunch in Oklahoma not too long ago, and I was eating dinner with one of my wife's friends, and she was just telling me how much you should get at that VA. Go talk to them. You know, go sit down and have the conversation with them because – and invariably, you will find out that they do owe you something. Not necessarily to owe you, but you will be presented with those opportunities, but only if you ask. They're not going to come to you in a lot of cases. Only if you ask. So Keith, again, I would like to thank you for joining us. You have really been a blessing to me and to so many other people that you come across. Your family is such a wonderful, wonderful family. We love you all. You have always been a wonderful person, you know, and a dear, dear friend to me and my wife. So I really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you, and same to you as well, man. And you will be getting the invitation for that retirement ceremony soon.
All right. I can't wait. All right, we're going to take another quick break here, and then once we return, we're going to open up the phone lines again, and we're going to talk a little bit about Tyler Perry's his opening, for better or for worse, show that he had today. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to be discussing Tyler Perry's new sitcom. We talked about it a couple of days ago, and I wanted to take advantage of this opportunity to do so again. But I wanted to kind of revisit some of the issues that was brought up during the show. And And so for this last segment, Jim and I are going to talk a little bit about the show. Now, so if you didn't get an opportunity to see it or don't know that much about it, so what happened was there's a new drama called For Better or Worse that will follow the relationship of the lovesick couple, Tasha Smith and Michael Jai White, to reprise of their roles in Michael plays an ex-football player turned sports commentator, and Tasha Smith also resumed her role as Angela, the edgy, outspoken wife of Marcus. And so the show aired Friday at, I want to say, 9 Central Time. And so I don't know if you got an opportunity to catch it, but it was a really good episode, and it really highlighted a lot of things in relationships. And so Jim and I, we're going to talk about this. Jim, you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so first up, what was your assessment of the show?
Oh, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think the characters are real people, which I think is Tyler Perry's strength in terms of his level of creativity and developing characters, creating people that we know, which I think is why he's been so successful. Every girlfriend has a Tasha for a friend, or you used to, unless you've outgrown her. So you kind of know some of the people that he comes up with. So I thought it was a great opening night to, it really touched on some hardcore issues right off the bat. It wasn't anything made up. It was real life stuff. And I think that's what makes Tyler Perry, either you love him or you don't. And there's really not a lot of gray area in the middle of that.
I have to agree with you. So if you had to put a message, attach a message to his show, what would you say the message would be that you can attach to the show?
Well, there's several. I mean, there's one on forgiveness. There's one on there's dealing with the here and now. There's the one of being available to your spouse, communication between two people. Lesson learned in terms of how to get along with the other, by either the ex or the baby mama, so to speak, or even the baby father. You know, that's going to be a new dynamic here as well. So how do you manage that get along in those types of situations? How do the adults in the room behave like adults for the best interest of children? So there, I mean, you know, Tyler, he touches on, like I say, he touches on real life issues that people deal with every day. And when you're blending families, as I stated the other night, when you're blending families, you really have to make sure everybody's on the same page in the same book. So sometimes we're not even on the same, not only are we not on the same page, we're not even the same book. And
you know,
that creates chaos.
Absolutely. You know, I remember when we talk about African Americans being portrayed on a national television show like The Cosby Show. The Cosby Show showed us in a positive light because you had a lawyer and a doctor couple. You had the three, the two and a half kids or the three and a half kids. You had the dog. You had the, so you had all of those white picket fence type of fairy tale type of components to relationships, which are what we should all aspire to. But the reality is, the blended family is more so than not in our society. And so I like the fact that Tyler is addressing that in a real way, and then not showing it in a negative light, but showing you how to deal with it in a positive light. So, yeah, you're still going to have issues with that baby mama drama, but how do you deal with that? And so the first episode, of course, dealt with that very exact topic. So how do you think he came off by presenting that particular issue?
Well, like I said, with the top two characters being the mother being, you know, characters spin off from Why Did I Get Married, what I saw Tyler do was stretch those characters out and give them more substance, and giving Tasha, Angela, character a little bit more substance to her. To her being. I mean, they're the older couple, they're the married couple, and they should be the most stable couple. So taking some of the bite out of her, not all of it because she still has to be Angela, but taking some of the bite out of her where she's just not the angry black woman. So you see him developing her to be more than just that. And then I think, you know, attacking that issue right off the bat in terms of raising children that are not your own, there's a lot of ways, you know, families are blended. It's not always where somebody left somebody, you know, and it wasn't amicable. You know, there could be times, you know, people get divorced and they just get divorced. I mean, you know, life happens. Doesn't mean they're mad about it or they're angry or anything like that. It's not a bad situation. It wasn't, you know, somebody, you know, trapped somebody and that person's never been in their life. It doesn't always have to have a negative connotation to blending a family. And I think he showed that, you know, that they were together a long time ago and that things just kind of happened. And so let's try to make this the best that we can. The kids are older now. They're paying attention to us. You know, some of that stuff we could say when they were little and get away with it, we can't say that anymore, you know. And so I think, and that's real life, because we know people that have conversations in front of their children they should not have in front of their children about their spouse, about friends that they know, about people.
Absolutely.
At church. You know, so many ways we can better parent that we don't, because we don't take the time to really think about, you know, how that's going to have an impact on this child's relationship. And so we have to be careful with that. And I think he kind of addressed all that head on.
And so I like the fact that that is, again, one of the driving messages behind the show. People can talk about Tyler Perry and, you know, in every which way that they can, but he always have a driving home message to present to the people. If you look above the, you know, if you get past the superficial craziness that a lot of people want to talk about, or you get past some of the buffoonery that is betrayed, or sometimes people laughing and joking and hollering around. But if you look, you take a deep look at what's going on, you can really get the message behind his movies or his shows. So the second layer or the second dimension I thought that he was able to provide any of the viewers was the fact that he had three different types of relationships. You talk about the stable marriage relationship, but he also has the kind of the boyfriend, girlfriend, new relationship. And he also has the whole dynamic of what my mama used to call shacking, you know, having people living together and getting all of the amenities, all of the deals, all of the good parts of a relationship, but no contract, no marriage behind that. So how do you think he did with those three types of typical relationships that people have all the time?
I think once again he hit it head on in terms of the new couple getting to know each other and how they're closer than what they thought because of some how connected they already are. To the couple that's living together, it appears as though the man has one idea and the woman might be stretching towards another one. She may have felt one way a year ago and now might be a little bit different. They're 3 years into this and he's determined and they don't need to get married and she's kind of having some different thoughts about it. And so, and that's typical. I mean, that happens in relationships. And so that's why communication is so important, that you continue to dialogue. It's not a conversation you have one time and you're done with it. Some of these things, as people grow and develop, you have to go back and revisit, because my mind may have changed. My thought process may have changed, or the reason why may have changed, because I'm looking at it from a different angle. And so it's important, and I, you know, we'll see, I'm assuming, that we'll see how that relationship develop as, you know, she may have some different thoughts about what he said, and then, you know, how he was, you know, speaking for her and not allowing her to speak for herself and not that kind of bothered her a little bit. So seeing how they grow into that and still come out okay, which I'm sure they will. But relationships, and when you're getting to know someone, you do go through some ups and downs and some ins and outs. Some hurt feelings come up sometimes, some intentional, some not, but that's a part of the process. And hopefully we'll see people go through and not just walk away. A lot of times we don't really want to go through anything, but we want all the benefits of everything. And sometimes you got to go through the fire. The cornbread is not going to get cooked just sitting on top of your counter.
That's,
you know,
right, all made up pretty. Yeah.
Right, you got all the ingredients in there, but it's not cornbread till you put it in the fire.
That's
so
right.
Sometimes in relationships, we do have to go through the fire.
Absolutely.
As Chaka Khan would say.
I want to talk about the third dimension then of what I when I was able to gather. And a lot of people are probably going to be looking at me strange. How was I able to pull out of this out of the movie? But if you really look at what Tyler Perry does, you have to understand he's an artist. And as an artist, they're not just not making movie; they're making art. And in most art pieces or art forms, you're going to find some underlying message. And so the third dimension that I was able to pull from the show was the fact that the people there were professionals, they were business owners. They were talking about moving themselves from a corporate structure into a ownership structure. And so I thought he did a really good job of displaying how people can get together, not always going to be peachy-keachy every day, but the fact that there is some work involved, there are some things you have to be able to survive in order to be successful. And so I thought he did a really good job at portraying the characters to have an ownership type of spin. You've seen them having success in the homes and the things that they were doing. So what are your thoughts about that, Jima?
I think you're right. I think it's important for us to see all images of ourselves. I mean, we're not all living in the mansion that we saw, but we're not all homeless either. We're not all, you know, walking around with our pants sagging down, and we're not all walking around in suits all day. So there's a wide variety to us, and we should see that variety on television and in the movies and everywhere else, but we have to demand that. And so I think with him showing that spectrum, because, you know, you talk about the ownership piece, but, you know, in one of the dialogues, they was talking about student loans, and I know I can relate to student loans. And, you know, what impact that has on my monthly budget. So, you know, there's just real life stuff, and seeing him grow from being the athlete on the field to now being the person, you know, running a business that's taking his talent from one part and transferring it over to another is great. And as I stated on Friday, is that that's what we want to see, because there will be life after. If things go well, you know, there will be a life after. And what are you going to do after? How do you prepare now for after? And that's in anything. And it's interesting that we're saying that as we just talked to Keith Hurst about life after the military. There's life after entertainment, life after sports. You know, what does that day after look like? You know, and so seeing him show ownership with the wife owning her salon and expanding it, and the husband owning his sports casting show and business and you know, different things around that, and bringing in a new partner, which means they're talking about expanding now. You know, that's awesome, you know, that we get to see that, because there are a lot of people that live that life. And it's probably more than what we know, because we don't see it that often. So I have to commend Tyler Perry for letting me see that life on television. I appreciate that.
And so, and then finally, as we close this segment and get ready to close the show, I want to talk about Tyler Perry himself. We just mentioned his characters. We mentioned the relationship piece. We mentioned the individual characters and how they matured over the past several years. And we also talked about the different dynamics of the characters and their successes. But I want to move now to Tyler Perry himself, his maturation over this last several years as we move from the plays, the bootleg plays. Let's be honest. The reason why we know Tyler Perry is because of the bootleg plays on DVD and now to the silver screen. How has he grown over the years?
Well, I think he's grown a lot because he's taken more risk, and that's what you do when you grow. You stretch yourself even further than the first time. You allow yourself to go outside of your comfort zone. You know who you are. You know whose you are. You know you're here for a purpose, and every day you wake up trying to live out that purpose. And I really believe that's what Tyler Perry does. He's comfortable with who he is. He had to grow into that level of comfort, because a lot of times, you know, he didn't feel worthy of it all. So he had to grow into that. So I think now that he's in it, he sees it as such a blessing. He sees it as such a way to bless others. Tyler Perry has probably employed more black people since the time he's been making movies than my whole life. And so that's to be commended. So I think he's grown. He's stretching himself. He's not doing just the Madea character. When you look at it, I think it's about half and half the number of movies he's done that had Madea in them and those that did not have Madea in them. And so although people want to talk about, you know, the ones with Madea, that's his bread and butter. That's his moneymaker. You know, you don't hear people talking a lot about Daddy's Little Girls or Family's Praise. Neither one of them had Madea in them. But they talk about everybody else. They talk about all the other ones, though, Diary of a Mad Black Woman and Madea going to jail. I mean, you know, so he knows where his bread is buttered at, but he also knows he has to stretch himself. And he's still doing his plays live, and so he hasn't forgotten his base. He hasn't forgotten what got him to Hollywood, where he is the top moneymaker in Hollywood, and he's stretching that. And so I think we have to give him credit what credit is due. He has definitely gone where no other director, black or white, has ever gone before.
That's right. That's right. So what do you make of all of the nonsense around Kim Kardashian being in his new movie?
It's nonsense. Tyler Perry, like we said last week, he can put anybody in his movie he wants to because he's the director. I don't see anybody calling Clint Eastwood people he put in his movies or not. I mean, you know, there's so many movies that come out that don't have a black face in it. So I don't see us out there marching in front of them. So we need to be marching in front of Tyler Perry or boycotting Tyler Perry because he wants to put Kim Kardashian in the movie. Let's put that somewhere else. You know, let's look at, you know, I was looking at even animated shows that's coming out over the holidays, this Arthur Christmas or whatever. You know, even in animation, you can find a black face. That's, I don't understand that in this day and age.
That's troublesome.
And
yeah,
so,
that's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, and so we want to talk about Kim Kardashian, and yet we don't want to talk about something that we could probably really have a real influence on. And make some noise about. So, you know, I think we have to be a little bit more realistic about, you know, what our expectations are. And he's a director. At the end of the day, he's a businessman. And at the end of the day, his bottom line is making a profit.
Absolutely. You know, again, this is another excellent show. Thanks to you. You always do such a great job. And I have to applaud you. Your perspective, of course, is unique. And that's why I like to encourage people to make sure they go out to the blogs, because Jima does an excellent job putting that work together out there, and does and she is the prime reason we're having so much success on current events with Patrick Cook. And so I would like to thank you. Jima, any final thoughts?
Well, there's two. Of course, the one is that we remember that it's now a year away from voting for next year's major presidential election. Please go out and make sure that you know what the new voting laws are in your state. Get your families registered to vote. Let's not wait till the last minute. 39 states have changed their voting laws on their books, so let's make sure we know what those changes are. Get registered so when voting day comes, where there are no surprises on what you need to be able to vote for next year. On another note, I did get a call, Patrick, as we were winding up our call with Keith Hurst wanting us to go a little further to another show and talking about the day after the military. And so maybe that's something we can plan to do here in the near future, is to have a few more former military veterans on and talk about what that day after was and how they prepared, or if they didn't prepare, what they wish they would have done for that day after.
As my executive producer, okay, I got the hint. I will do that. And I'll make sure we put the show together, and I'll put it together.
Okay.
Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. And also, thanks to Chief Yeoman Keith Hurst for joining us, an outstanding hero of mine and military veteran, soon retiring. We can't wait to celebrate with him. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Don't forget to bookmark this site and visit our blog at TaylorMade Talk Radio. talkradiotalkradio.blogspot.com. That's TAILORMADE talkradio.blogspot.com. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.